What is Chamchara?
So this is actually a place in the country where a lot of scams originate. When government announced that EV are going to get a subsidiary, the demand for having a EV dealership went up.
Yeah.
Now, these attackers started putting up similar looking pages, which is accepting EV dealerships. And then they call you saying that, sir, your request is pending. It'll be verified in a few days.
Yeah.
And they call again, sir, you are now eligible for the dealership. You have to pay 5 lakh rupees down payment. You know the number of people who paid 5 lakh rupees?
Yeah.
Thousands.
Already paid.
Yeah.
And got scammed.
Yeah, exactly. We go to the dark web, we can buy the credit card of someone for $5. There will be listings like Amazon listing where you can actually buy data of any company and their employees and including their salary for maybe $20.
And why is not government monitoring dark web or taking action against it?
Taking action is very difficult because it's not a central system where the government can just say, you know, cut. In cybersecurity, we have a saying, you are either hacked or you don't know you are hacked. It is like learning to swim online. That's how most cybersecurity courses are. I'll only see these things going up than coming down.
And there are Chinese loan app scams.
Oh yeah.
What are that?
So here what they are doing is
Hi, this is Siddharth Aluwalia. Welcome to the Neon Show. Today I have a very dear friend, Rahul Sassi, founder of CloudSec. I'm also super proud that Neon Fund is a very early investor in CloudSec, and I have worked very closely with Rahul over the last couple of years, right? We have shared some fond memories together, and we have seen the journeys very closely, right? From, you know, the journey when they were a very small team. to now you're a very large team.
Revenue, when we met, we are three times the revenue.
Yes.
Yeah.
Five times, I would say.
True. Yeah, correct. Yeah.
Five times.
Yeah.
And Rahul, today, you know, first of all, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah.
And very excited to discuss few key trends on this podcast with you, right? So we are going to discuss cybersecurity, dark web security, artificial intelligence, and you know, some basic things like Aadhaar data leaks in India, the recent cyber attacks in India, the WhatsApp-based attacks, the phishing attacks.
Yeah.
So I would just like to start with, what is dark web?
So, I mean, anything which is, the word dark web came into existence on the fact that criminal activity happens at night.
Yeah.
Robbers go out, steal.
Dark web is like dark night?
So it's basically like, you know, where the dark corner of the internet is what is the meaning of the word dark web. So anything illegal that happens, is normally happens on the dark web. Though that's just one portion of what we do, you know, we kind of, that's one of the sources we monitor to identify cyber risk.
So, before we dive into more into dark web, tell us what CloudSec does.
Yeah. So, CloudSec is in the business of predicting cyber threats. We build technology that can foresee what is the next cyber attack.
What is a cyber threat?
I'll give you a very simple example. That's something which you discovered last day. If you look at all the ATMs today in the country, they are not managed by the banks.
Yeah.
The ATMs are managed by a vendor.
Third parties.
We discovered a simple issue that allowed any ATM in the country to be monitored because the vendor who was managing that ATM had a misconfiguration in one of their audit application, and it was exposed on the internet, which allowed anyone to see the live footages of the ATM, how much money they are loading into the ATM, when the truck driver is bringing in the cash. Now, we reported this to our customer, which is the largest bank in the country. They reported it to the vendor. I won't name the largest bank in the country.
Okay, got it.
Okay, private bank in the country. But this we prevented from a bunch of malicious guys from attacking and getting this information. So we predicted that, prevented it, so that bad guys were not able to access the same.
And where was this information shared?
It was not. That's what I'm saying. We kind of identified the risk which
could
lead to this incident.
And how did you identify this risk?
So, which is one of our monitor, which it does. It's called S-Vigil. It's a supply chain monitoring solution. It monitors your vendors because your data is not sitting in just your computer.
Yeah.
Right? You have vendors, partners who shares this data. How do you know today whether any of your vendors is accidentally leaking your information? That's what supply chain monitoring solution S-Vigil does. And we have different data sources which we collect to, you know, it's like how we predict rain today. How do we predict rain? We pass the data of rain through a mathematical model which tells us how much it is going to rain. And it's very, I'll ask you a simple question. If I ask you to think of a pet bird, like think of a pet bird, right? And people who are watching the podcast and can also do the same. Think for a minute of a pet bird. You might be thinking of a parrot.
Yeah.
Right? So will be a lot of people. Now, I just predicted what you were thinking. Like that's a smile on your face. Now, this is magic, but it's science.
Yeah.
Science based on data and statistics. Right? So, if you build, gather enough data, and then you have data set, data science models, mathematical models, machine learning models, which uses this to make these predictions, that's what we do. So we tell accurately what is the next target, why it would be a target, and the reasons why they would be a target. And this information and this intelligence can be consumed by our customers to prevent a cyber attack, which will save them millions of rupees, you know, like when an incident has happened, imagine this data which I spoke about, it's leaked already on the dark web, then the incident has happened.
Yeah.
Our job is to stop it from happening in the first place.
Yeah.
Not once spilled onto the internet. So we build technologies around this space. We use artificial intelligence, and that's what from the very beginning of our existence, we've been doing.
And you mentioned you monitor vendors, you monitor dark web. Where is this invisible web sitting?
So dark web is just one portion of the data we monitor. Like I said, the invisible data sits in, well, it sits in computers of, it sits in computers in the end. But then to access those computers, you need to have a separate, it's like a VPN network on top of
the audience doesn't
correct.
Know
so
about
you
VPN.
Need to install a Tor browser. Oh, okay. What is a VPN? It is actually a private internet, I would say. It's something on top of the current internet where you have to tunnel your data through that particular traffic. It is like a world inside a world, inside the internet world. So you need to use a particular tool called Tor tool, Tor to access the dark web. It's a browser. So only using that particular browser, you can reach that part of the internet where there's a lot of illegal actors. In fact, if you go to the dark web, you can buy the credit card of someone for $5. You can buy, there will be listings like Amazon listing where you can actually buy the data of any company and their employees and including their salary, pay slips and all those information for maybe $20.
And why is not government monitoring dark web or taking action against it?
Monitoring is possible. Many of them are doing, some of them are government or our customers as well. Taking action is very difficult because you can't, like I said, right? It's not a central system where the government can just say, you know, cut. They can't. They can't take down things from there. It's impossible. It's same like, why can't you take down the Bitcoin network? It's not like a central database. It's sitting on multiple people's computers. And the Tor will give you access. So the Tor protocol is very interesting. You know, it kind of, you know, it actually routes your data through multiple nodes and exits to the final destination. So it's very difficult to even track who is running those websites in the end.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that this dark web is sitting across multiple computers, which are hidden from normal people. Like you can't access these computers.
Correct.
And these might be in any country also, right? So there is no legal enforcement on this data.
Correct. It's very difficult. It's like, it's very difficult to take down something from the dark web, though it is possible. If you can identify which computer it is sitting, which is what the Tor network prevents you from identifying, you don't know what is the real IP address of that machine. But if it, some way you are able to reveal it, then you will be able to take it down.
Okay. And there's a lot of talk of cybersecurity. Explain in like layman terms, what is cybersecurity?
What is cybersecurity? Okay. So today, you know, you have your, all your money is sitting in your bank account.
Yeah.
And it's not like money sitting there. It's just a number sitting in a computer, which says that you have this much money. Today we have smart drones which can fly around, capture pictures, etc., etc. Today we have, and if you look at the war which is happening, the tanks. If you fire a RPG rocket onto that tank, the tank can automatically detect a missile coming to it and destroy it when it's close in a few seconds. What I'm trying to say is that these are all computers in the end. A small computer which has some level of information or action sitting on it. Mm. The objective is to protect these things. If you didn't lose your money in the last 2 years, that's because of the work of a cybersecurity professional who prevented it from happening or prevented a bad guy from leaking it. If you see all the quadcopters and drones which are flying around and they're not crashing into each other, including the flight systems, that is because numerous security engineers worked on it by foolproofing it. So cybersecurity is all about protecting the computers and how they should behave. Bad guys can actually, reverse engineer, control different aspects of the computer and make it up to their own interest.
Give us a few examples, right, where these bad guys have taken control of a large system to harm in the last few years.
Yeah, if you know about the Bangladesh bank heist, $1 billion was exfiltrated from the bank.
Okay.
By presumed to be North Korean hackers. And they worked on it for months. Again, you have to understand $1 billion is... So what they do is, what they did is, SWIFT protocol is the protocol, which is like a technology which is used to transfer money between banks. So when you say that I want to transfer ₹1 million from this bank to another bank, this protocol talks to each other and makes that happen. So front end and all, application, internet banking, or, you submitting a request is just the front end. But these two technologies or these two computers talk to make sure that $1 billion transfers to here. These attackers hacked into the SWIFT network of the bank, which they got access and not going to deal into that. And then they started making requests. Because now you are in the core technology. You don't even need to take money from anyone. You can virtually generate money and say, send $1 billion, split that into 25 transactions, send it to 25 different banks. And they did that. So now they did that on a Saturday, on a Friday evening, because Saturday, Sunday, a bank is on holidays. Right? And they also did one more thing. So in the bank, every bank, they have a mechanism, a ledger, end of the day or the next day in 24 hours, a ledger prints out every transaction which has happened so that they can reconcile it and see, hey, this is the actual authorized transaction, this is the transaction. They also hacked into the printer.
Okay.
And made the printer unusable. So on Saturday night, Friday night, the person came to print, the printer is not working. It's not restarting and rebooting. It's like maybe some problem with the printer. So people went home, right? And then they came back on Monday. When they came back on Monday and then they print the ledger, $1 billion is out.
Wow.
And it's panicky, right? That the whole bank is on panicky mode. Now, the bank now sends emails to because it has gone to other banks outside the country. Send email saying that, hey, this is an unauthorized transaction, block it. Don't let it get withdrawn. Now the hackers also had access to the emails. So they responded to the email which went out saying that, yeah, sure, we'll take care of it. Which is fake response. Right? Because they were monitoring the whole chain. They planned for it for months. There was also, and this story is from a different, there was also an instance where the attackers, now you have to understand where the money has to go into, right? Because it has reached a bank, someone has to withdraw it. In one of the scenarios, the attackers actually brought a bank. They brought a company, a private limited company, and then the money eventually came to that company, and they purchased this company for the sole purpose of checking, withdrawing these transactions. Okay. So I'm saying these things are happening. And to your question, what do? We or our work, not just mine or my companies, hundreds of cybersecurity professionals out there have prevented your money from being taken by bad guys. Because we did it in the background, you would never know, or we will never get credit to some of the good things which have happened.
So it's almost like soldiers sitting at our borders, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because citizens inside a country are leading a good life. We don't know how many attacks these soldiers prevented.
Yeah, I haven't even used the, the terrorist court's case. The number of terrorists they would have captured would have prevented n number of bomb blasts from happening. But we would never know because it got prevented. That's the state where we are as well.
And here in case of like cybersecurity, the scale of one incident could be like the attack on Taj in Mumbai.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, correct.
So many people lost lives.
Correct.
Right? And it's getting day by day more and more dangerous, right? Tell us about the role of what is artificial intelligence and what role it's playing when bad guys use it to attack other people through dark web.
So that's the future, by the way, right? I mean, with all the advancements in AI, today, humans hack machines.
Yeah.
The future would be machines hacking machines.
Okay.
And
how can a machine hack another machine?
See, if you look at the advancement which has happened in the AI space, right, and the large language models, they are capable of doing tasks much better, or certain tasks much better than human beings. Many exams are being cracked by these large language models.
Yeah.
In my perspective, ChatGPT-4 would be able to do X, but ChatGPT-10 will have much more higher capabilities, which can replicate a human hacker and their behavior. And people who have access to that can just reprogram that to compromise computers at mass scale. Even today it can, by the way. It is basically just automation. I'm just saying a machine to try every different things till it gets access to another machine is even possible today.
Like how does artificial intelligence does it?
How does artificial... So I'll give you a very simple example, right? Let's take ChatGPT to browse the internet, find all the email addresses of an employee of my organization. Fact of the internet is there are enough documents who is already leaked where my employee information, email ID, full name and all those things are there. So ChatGPT can find that. Second instruction, draft an email which pretends to be coming from the head of IT, asking them to change the password because their access is going to be restricted. It can draft that email. Second, ask it to create a web page which could potentially look like the IT system IT admin page of CloudSec. It can do that. It can also make a code to send that email to all those people which we identified. And even if like a percentage of them click and fill the passwords, the AI has now passwords to my inboxes. Right? All these things today itself a machine can do.
Got it.
Right? Now, I'm just putting you a very high level possibility of what would happen in the future. But a lot more thing can happen.
And you've seen like how many of these kind of dark web hackers or unethical hackers would be there in India today?
That's a very difficult number to
any put.
I don't think there is any official data also on these. Because see, in cybersecurity, we have a saying. You are either hacked or you don't know you are hacked. Similarly, if you don't know you are hacked, you don't even know who would have actually done it. in the first place. So it's very difficult to actually quantify and give a number to that.
It's like asking how many terrorists exist in Pakistan.
It's not like they publish a database of.
But do you have a data of how many ethical hackers are there in the country that prevent these kind of attacks?
I would say not enough. I don't know the exact numbers.
But like 1,000, 10,000?
No, in lakhs at this point of time. And the what I know is the number of job opportunities and the number of skilled labor in this field is significantly less.
And why is India not able to develop enough of this ethical hacker talent that prevents these kind of attacks?
Well, see, even if you look at the academics today, there are many colleges who teach cybersecurity, but has nothing to do with the actual cybersecurity, the real world cybersecurity. There are maybe a handful of colleges who gives their students hands-on experience on what is happening. It is like learning to swim online. That's how most cybersecurity courses are.
Okay.
You need to go in the river, ocean to swim, right? That infrastructure we don't have today.
And what is the infra required to create like world class?
I think IIT Kanpur has a lab and they have some really good professors who's passionate about. Sandeep Shukla is one of them. First, you need to have a good teacher who understands the subject, right? The real subject, not just textbook subject, which is taught 20 years back.
Yeah.
Chapter 11, by the way. And then that person needs to have enough funding to build a lab and a system where people can actually practice things. That's one thing. Cybersecurity is not a topic you can read and learn from books. That's like the most bullshit way of learning cybersecurity. It has to be practiced. So for that, you need the lab facility or you have to look at real world scenarios. I think I would say it's just the adequate funding and the resources and someone to lead it at this point of time.
And which is the best nation in the world in terms of producing the best quality cybersecurity talent or dark web prevention talent?
No, cybersecurity, debatable. US is a large country, so they have a lot of talent in this space. Israel, because cybersecurity in the end is part of defense, under defense. And they are a country, they teach their citizens to have defensive capabilities, and part of their life, they're also exposed to some level of cybersecurity.
I think in three countries in the world, I remember. One is Israel, other is Singapore, other is South Korea. Israel, Singapore and South Korea, yes. There's a 2-year mandatory training after plus two, like you're 18 years of old. Every citizen has to go 2 years of military training.
Military training. Right. So some of these military, because they are thinking about defending, protecting data, defending infrastructure, I think somewhere they are getting exposure to these things. But you can't really say at this point of time that these countries have the best or this wouldn't have the best.
But let's say today if we see number of companies in cybersecurity. Israel has the highest number and is the gold standard in terms of.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the number of startups in cybersecurity, they would have the most, which I said is because of the first point which I mentioned. But you can't necessarily say that, yes, the concentration and the kind of people, they have good skilled people, but you can't now say that we don't have those skilled people either. In the last 10 years, we have had significant number of people coming up. In fact, if you look at Facebook or Google's bug bounty is where companies pay security folks money to find a security incident. So Google typically pays $10,000, which is about 7 lakh, for a good security bug. Now, in the top 3 list of each of these, top 10, you would see a Indian security researcher. I'm not saying bug bounty is the thing to look at when you're ranking security skills. It is one of the things you can look at. It's public. That data is publicly available. But I think down the line, we'll have a lot more people coming.
And right now, which are the top companies in India in cybersecurity space? Startups or companies? Like Palo Alto Networks, I know is in $100 billion.
That is big because of their revenue in the US. I mean, in terms of revenue.
Yeah, but in India.
India, see, that's one thing. The last company which got listed in the public market, and the last IPO service is QKIL. They got listed almost, QKIL, it's a endpoint security, it's an antivirus sort of security solution, got listed almost 14 years back, a little more than that. But then I would say that the market did not support them enough, because, you know, there's still a lot of understanding in the commoners on, you know, potential of the space. But, so they are the only one in my perspective, like a good product company in my perspective was a listed company. There are so many other small ones, but I would not name.
There's a popular web series called Jamtara. Have you seen
that? Yeah. I mean, seen that. I know I contributed to some of the data sets.
In Jamtara? What is Jamtara, for example?
No,
I mean, for our audience.
So this is actually a place in the country, a state, a city in the country, I want to specifically go mention, where a lot of scam happen. I mean, scams originate, not happen, scams originate. I mean, you know, you would see people creating fake call. Okay, so they'll go to Twitter or any of the social media pages and say, this is the customer care number of Ola. Now, anyone who has an Ola grievances, they'll go to Twitter and say, I have an Ola. I have a bad issue with Ola. These guys will immediately go say, hey, I'm calling from Ola customer support. Call me on this number. Yeah. Poor people will call. And this is not Ola. Every bank has this problem. Every consumer facing company has this problem. Now the poor guy will call this number. These guys will play all the auto-tune in the background pretending like, make them pretend that it's actually the customer support reach. They'll even make them you hold for a few minutes. They're like, hey, hi, what happened? And you explain the problem. They'll say, okay, fine, I'll just send you an OTP. Just send the OTP to verify you. And then they'll trigger an OTP request to make a transaction from your account.
How did they get the access to the account in the first place?
No, so you can actually, some portals you can actually, for example, you can connect your Paytm account to other online services which use OTP. If I have your number, I can go put your phone number in that service. The verification is an OTP coming to you. Yeah. So while on the call, I'm saying, I've just triggered an OTP for you. Can you just quickly check? On the call, you're not looking where this is the OTP coming from. You'll just read it out. And within seconds, they'll just take all the money. So like this, they create fake call center numbers. They create fake web pages. One of the things we saw this for Ola particularly was that when government announced that EV electric vehicles are going to get a subsidy, the demand for having a EV dealership went up.
Yeah.
Now these attackers started putting up Ola similar looking pages, which is accepting EV dealerships.
And they're asking money.
Now people are searching on internet and saying, oh, Ola dealership page. They land up on those fake pages. You fill in the you give all the information, phone number, full address, blah, blah, blah. And then they call you saying that, sir, you're request is pending, it'll be verified in few days.
Yeah.
And they call again, sir, you are now eligible for the dealership. You have to pay 5 lakh rupees down payment.
Yeah.
Now, you know the number of people who paid 5 lakh rupees?
No. How many?
Thousands of people.
Already paid?
Yeah.
And got scammed?
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, before they became our customer, and we actually kind of now track these pages down. The minute someone registers some of these pages, the minute someone registers some of these phone numbers, we help Ola take these things down proactively so that bad, good people don't lose their money.
And why are these scams originating in tier 2, tier 3 cities?
So the Jamtara is a place where a lot of these scammers operate from.
Okay.
And why it is from Jamtara, I forgot to mention. See, one guy who has a skill becomes a teacher because they are making money. Now, one person makes money is influencing a lot of, crime is cybercrime is inversely proportional to the economics.
Yeah.
Right? When economy goes down, crime goes up. So tier 2 cities, the economy is bad. I mean, people have to trying to feed their family. So they'll do any sort of means to make that money.
So it was shown in the movie that in classrooms, it's taught how to scam people.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. That's one thing. There's a teacher, one person. it becomes an economics.
And why does the local police force and government take action against these people? Because they know that the schools are running on ground. They are not running on cloud.
See, I mean, there were many officers whom I know who has worked on some of these cases. In fact, today morning also I was with an IPS officer who was part of the IB, who was telling me how some of their work or their work influenced other police persons in different parts of the country to take down some of these scamsters. The problem is the number of crime is higher than the people we have, the officers who have to track them down. So you can only take down one or two because the investigation will take time.
Yeah.
And like you said, if there are hundreds of people like that, how will you even tackle it? So that's where we are at this point of time.
And can you give some stats how this is increasing year on year in India and globally?
Every time when the economy goes down, we see this shooting up. Now, I can't predict how or where the economy would be, you know, end of next year. But in my perspective, what I am seeing is that the information or the skill needed to do these things are now readily available, which means even if in a 100 million population, 0.5% of the people are bad, that itself become a sizable number to create enough havoc. So I will only see these things going up than coming down.
And there are Chinese loan app scams.
Oh yeah.
What are that?
That's even more crazier, by the way. So here, what they are doing is, again, different forms of scam. Here, people, this all started with the COVID time, and I was also part of the RBI committee, which have put this together. What was happening was that at the time of COVID, people in the laborers were shortage of cash. Like, they were not getting money. They needed urgent cash. So all these loan apps started coming up. The loan apps, you know, you just register with your PAN number.
Yeah.
You install the app on your phone. They'll give you instantly 10,000 rupees with a high interest rate of 25% or 30%, whatever. And what we saw was the app guys now have literally full control of your contact information, all your gallery, because the app is installed. You gave all the permissions to the app at the time of getting that money credited. Now these guys have downloaded because once you give access to your gallery to an app, the app has full control on your gallery.
All images are shared.
Yeah. Anytime the app can download data and take it home. So every person who took money, they literally went to their databases, downloaded all their contact information and images stored on their phone. Now when they defaulted, or in some cases even not defaulting, they came back and said, you took 10,000 rupees from us, now you owe me 30,000 rupees. If you don't pay me that money now, I'm going to send every person in your contact list details your critical sensitive images which you have. Or some cases they started morphing also some of the images and then creating WhatsApp groups with those 10 contacts and humiliating people. And people committed suicide because of this.
Like how many people would have committed suicide?
I am aware about almost 10 different cases.
Yes.
Yeah. And
that's why it became such
a
critical issue for the country.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this all data was residing in China?
Yeah. So
why was it called Chinese loan app scam?
So what we saw was the money to that's the first thing, because they were making huge returns. What we saw was that the owners of these apps were not actually sitting in India. The money was actually coming from outside and was going outside. It was like, you know how the hawala thing works or how money laundering works, right?
So for example, tell us our audience, how does hawala or money laundering works?
Okay. So let's say they scammed a lot of people, made 1 lakh rupees. Okay, I'm just saying hypothetically 1 lakh rupees. Now this 1 lakh rupees has to go to their managers or the owner sitting in China.
Yeah.
With our current regulations, you can't send money out just like that. Now, hawala or money laundering works by, I would not be able to put public evidences, but part of the research we saw in Tirupati or some of those places where you sell hair, you know, you donate hair and this hair is eventually going somewhere and gets sold. So the commodity of hair is going out. So let's say a Chinese buyer is buying their hair. So yeah. Goods can go out.
Yeah.
But the payments to that goods is coming from the loan.
Understood.
Collection agents here. So they get the goods there, money here. So technically, hawala money laundering has happened.
And was Bitcoin cryptocurrency also involved in this?
Yes. So there are other, then what happened was, when the cops tracking these people down, by the way, moving money out is the most important thing, right? In some cases, what we have seen is that they were buying Bitcoins. Not buying, actually, to be honest. They were scamming users, pretending to be giving them job offers. They reach out and think they have a part-time job, and you give them a job. First, what they do is, they say there's a job, and they enroll. They do a job and they pay money also. They pay them 5,000 rupees or something. So now the trust is there. Now you say that you want to do advanced level job, buy Bitcoins worth 1 lakh rupees, invest in this business and you can make more money once they establish the trust. So that way individuals are converting money to Bitcoins and then they were getting siphoned out as well. But so many things that way.
And there are other popular scams also, right? Getting constant emails that I have money sitting in Kenya. I want to transfer it to you.
Yeah, but those mostly are like, you know, those we don't see anymore. It used to happen like many years back. Now there are more successful, mechanisms. So we don't see these very often these days, but still it works. You know, they have to understand, they send these emails to 10,000 people. There'll be one gullible person who would, you know, believe that there's a Nigerian prince and fall for it. But we see a lot more of the ones which I've mentioned than the other today.
And this is one part of phishing attack, right? You have also shared that hackers wrote email to your employees from a different email ID, pretending as Rahul Sarsi.
Yeah, no, that happens. Money. Correct. That
and
happens
on WhatsApp.
A lot, by the way. Yeah. And this is also, we believe this is one group which is again originating from China. Or
this is a phishing attack or what is called?
This is, can be a phishing thing where people are creating WhatsApp accounts with my photo and then immediately reaching out to people on WhatsApp.
And how do they get access to your employee?
See, that's one thing. There are enough lead generation platforms out there which will give you the entire employee details and phone numbers of CloudSec. Not CloudSec, any company. Yeah. Lead gen platforms. So they scrape these data from these lead gen platforms actually. And then they use it too. Yeah.
So phishing attack is whenever a person pretends to be somebody else, right?
Correct.
Either on email, now.
There are different, there's phishing which is called voice. That means you use voice, you call, and if you know, there are enough AI tools which you can, I can literally mimic your call, because I have your podcast, I can get your audio, I can train an AI model to speak like you, then I can make a phone call to your relatives and say, I am Siddharth, the same way you speak,
yeah.
I am stuck in an airport, can you just do a UPI transaction of this amount? That's happening now, I said.
Okay.
So that is wishing, voice-based phishing. Phishing, other ones is, phishing means, you know, any other way of pretending to be someone to.
And these attacks are increasing more and more.
The kind of, because with the technology is growing, now like I said, right, AI can do these jobs much better. And phishing is one thing you would never see going down. one form or the other will always exist because humans are the weakest link in cybersecurity. There will always be one person who will make that mistake.
And what is Aadhaar data leak and some WhatsApp leaks that
happened? Yeah, so first of all, many places where they claim Aadhaar data leaked, you have to understand this data is not coming. Aadhaar infrastructure where we store all the data of Aadhaar people, till date we don't have a incident which is verified where the that Aadhaar database has been breached.
Compromised, yeah.
So people crying Aadhaar data breached, which is wrong. So that infrastructure was never breached according to my knowledge. What has happened is people give their Aadhaar information to everyone. When you register to a new phone, when you register to a new loan application, when you register to your insurance, people give their information to so many people, companies, small companies. These people store these data in a very insecure way. There was a case where you can actually browse through the web, to the website of one of the insurer broker. Just browse through a particular website, particular folder. You can get all the Aadhaar data of everyone who has subscribed to that broker.
And, you know, this is, so third party brokers are getting leaked.
Yeah.
Because they have access to your Aadhaar.
Correct. So all the Aadhaar leaks you've been hearing is about leaking from all the third parties whom you have given information.
For example, I registered on a cab ride using my Aadhaar for KYC.
Hmm.
So if that KYC app gets hacked or the ride hailing app, then my Aadhaar data leaks happen.
Correct, exactly. That's how all the leaks you're hearing is coming from there. And there's a lot of that.
So, how does one person build a career in cybersecurity when there's so much incidents happening, right? You mentioned practical knowledge is one, but where does one attain this practical?
See, like I keep saying, cybersecurity is one thing. You should not be reading books. You should be having skills, not theoretical knowledge. You can read books, I'm not saying you should not. But this is like learning how to build a lock. You know the theory of how we build a lock, and you have dismantled the lock knowing how the whole thing operates. Now you, by the virtue of you knowing the lock, you are a locksmith. Now you can unlock any locks and even suggest a better architecture to build a lock because you know it. So both theoretical, obviously, and really good hands-on skill is required to be a good cybersecurity
person.
How
do people attain that hands-on skill?
For me, I spend in my college, you know, every day after college, I used to go to my internet lab, skip my dinner. I still don't eat dinner because of a habit I formed from college. So from 4 o'clock to 10 o'clock, because that's when the internet lab closed, I hustled being in the lab, learning, and whatever I learned, I practiced in whatever infrastructure I can find.
And another important thing is you mentioned it can't be learned from books because by the time a books get published.
Yeah, it's like books are like very outdated because in cybersecurity, there is always a new way of doing things. Because the old way, the secure defenders would have fixed it. Now the attackers find a new way.
It's like almost you are fighting a new rocket launcher with an old pistol.
Yeah. Or every day you learn to swim in your pond.
Yeah.
But the sea has it's much more difficult to swim as we. So like imagine now the sea concept every day, there's a new wave, kind of wave that you don't know how to swim.
And, I want to talk more about artificial intelligence as part of this podcast.
Yeah.
Right? What inspired you to marry AI and CyberSec in the first place?
Long answer to this. See, the whole AI thing, right? And in my perspective, it's the next step to evolution thing. And it's a next big thing, to be honest. And I don't know at this point of time whether it's going to be a good thing or a bad thing. I'm excited. I also have this philosophy that if I don't understand something, I should not fear it, but I should try to understand it. So now I tell you why AI would be the next big thing and why we choose to build a company core on AI.
Yeah.
If you look at evolution, And if you think evolution as an algorithm, what is the evolution algorithm? Survival of the fittest. If this guy is not strong enough, he perish.
Yeah.
It's a simple if and condition. It's a program. It's an algorithm. Now, that algorithm created the fish, the monkeys, the humans, right? Let's say each of them are a version. The fish is the version 1, monkeys were version 2, humans were version 3.
Yeah.
But that algorithm created us. And if you look at, on the other end, a neural network, which is what powers an AI, is also an algorithm. The outcome of that is ChatGPT-1, ChatGPT-2, ChatGPT-3.
What is neural net?
It is basically, okay, so two parts of neural net is how the neurons in our, it is basically a simulation of how the neurons in our head functions and how we make a decision. And then you tie up neural networks to reinforcement learning. Reinforcement learning is that I'm not telling you how to do something. I'm not writing a code to do something. Rather, I'm giving you a goal. Go figure out how to play football and win a game.
Yeah.
So the neural net with, along with reinforcement learning will keep playing football again and again till it finally wins a game.
Yeah.
And it doesn't
keep on learning, right?
It keep on learning, evolving till it finally gets the link. So that is how the neural networks functions. Now the new outcome of the neural networks plus the reinforcement learning, is what we call ChatGPT-1, ChatGPT-2. And ChatGPT is like a large, it's called LLMs. What they have done is they are teaching these machines to learn an abstract view of how the world communicates.
What is LLM?
Large language models, it's called. So basically something, you know, let's take every Wikipedia in article.
Yeah.
You use that to make a machine tell, let's say, I say I. What is the next word that could happen? I am. I will. Right? So the machines will be able to predict what is the next sequence or the best fit sequence of word. Now you give a prompt. Write an article about something. Write an article about Neon Show. Now, it will start with Neon Show is a great show. It will be able to put this thing together because it knows which is the best word to use to get to the goal.
Yeah.
That's how LLMs work. So now, as of today, if you look at the current world of LLMs, it has an abstract view of what the world has spoken or thinks about itself. And on top of that, they're building more rules, saying that you should do it this way. If this data comes, you should do it this way. And that's how you see some of those outcomes. You know, it is able to write poems. It is able to do a lot of human task for us today. Now, back to my original point. Now you have to understand evolution created us.
Yeah.
It is an algorithm. Neural networks plus reinforcement learning created these different models. Who are capable of doing certain tasks like these guys are able to do? But the difference is this evolution took billions of years. Here, the ChatGPT 1 started in 2017.
Yeah.
And we are at 4, which is one of the best models, in 2023.
Yeah.
In computer world, things happen much more faster. So whatever happened in this evolutionary steps, which took billions of years, could happen in 10 years. So we might be able to create much more smarter, capable machines in a short period of time. So the thought is whether these smart, good machines will be good to us or bad to us is something I don't know at this point of time. I can't decide. But this is my thinking also at that point of time, is that when these smart machines evolve, which will happen at some point of time, and they're going to start attacking all the machines which are out there, you would need machines controlled by us, smarter like them, to defend.
This is exactly like Matrix, right?
Yeah, it was one movie which I was super, you know, inspired, in fact, to even join computer science for that matter. You know, yes, it talks so much about the concept. And yeah, absolutely.
It's a fight between the machines that humans created are now controlling?
I will also say that it might not... Okay, South Korea might have their own bad AI. Yeah. Okay, that AI will try to destroy the enemies of South Korea. So it might not be even humanity versus machines. It might be machines versus machines controlled by countries as well. What I'm trying to say is that the future, and again, I'm not sure which, how long in the future, I believe the future would be machines trying to attack machines, not humans anymore. So we,
why is that? Why will not attack humans? Why will they attack
humans? Because they are much more capable of executing these tasks without getting tired.
There's a popular narrative in, you know, Hollywood movies, especially action movies, that the machine take control of the nukes, the nuclear missiles, which every of these countries have, and then they fire on.
I mean, like I said, like, I don't know at this point of time whether it'll be good to us, but. If you simply put the geopolitical system today, each governments can have their own versions, which is going wrong.
Right now, ChatGPT is very simple. Like, what's your understanding of ChatGPT? What it is?
It's basically, you know, what you and I know about the world. The same knowledge is represented in the form of a simple CSV file. It's a simple file, which is comma-separated file, which has got a lot of mathematical numbers, but eventually can do some of the tasks which you are doing.
So right now, if I have to write an essay, it can write an essay for me.
Correct. Correct.
But that's the limitation of it. Or I want to create an image. I want to create a video.
Can do that, right?
Yeah.
It can do that.
It understands.
Yes. That's the version 4. That's the version 4 in 4 years.
Yeah.
Now imagine 10 years. And this 4 years, people didn't see. When I say people, there are only few companies who are building these LLMs. Yeah. Okay, you have to understand, before, only academics were doing new AI research.
Yeah.
No private companies stepped into it. Academics have very limited resources.
But Google has been doing AI for a long period of time.
That's something limited. Whether it's Google or there are few companies who are playing around with it. But mostly it was academics. But now, Microsoft and ChatGPT showed the world that there's so much more you can do. What is going to happen? There are like $200 billion companies who have $1 billion cash reserve sitting. What do you think they're going to invest in? They'll try to build their own versions of LLMs or AIs for that matter. Each will have one version.
And do you think people will lose jobs because of it? Because a lot of human stuff, repeatable stuff will
be done. Jobs.
Let's say, if I train my model on the podcast of Neon Show and your model on your podcast, then these two models can interact and do another podcast, which is just generated by a machine.
Yes, yes. Now, so, even much of the video editing tasks today, I mean, you can create a reels from, I know you create reels from this thing. Many AI tools even today can build that reel out. Edit it, put some content in between, build it. See, I'll tell you something. One thing I can immediate, I think in the next few years, you will see people using AI to do their jobs better. At what level? So that is how it is going to be. People will transition to or use these tools to do their jobs better. And I think that will be the next 5, 6, 7, 8 years will be like that. I don't know what time it will flip completely. It is quite difficult to make that.
I'm trying to imagine a world where I don't have to reply to my emails or WhatsApp messages.
Yeah.
Let's say, for example, as soon as I get an email,
AI
drafts an email for me today, and I just have to review
technology it. Can do that today. It's just that you don't have access to that technology, which is... But ChatGPT has made APIs available. Now you can programmatically make that happen.
Every email that lands in my inbox, you are saying,
An
automatic response will be drafted for
you. Yes. Accurate. Very accurate responses. You can even teach... With the new models, what they have done is, you can actually teach them how Siddhartha Ahluwalia writes emails.
Yeah.
So go through all your previous emails to see this is the way you respond. So it can make those, even that's possible today.
And is there anybody using that?
I mean, see, only, you know, it takes some time for technology to be adopted. And when you see a bunch of people using it, We are in the early days, to be honest, but it will catch fire pretty fast.
Go on. And what's the, there's a lot of debate on privacy going on. What's it about in the world?
Well, see, privacy is fundamentally about you have your data given to someone. You need to have the rights to know what they're going to use with that data.
And whether you can stop them using your data or not.
Correct. I mean, you know, you see, all the 2340 apps on your phone has some amount of access to your data. Yes. Now, like I said, how the Chinese guys were taking data
without your permission,
if one of your apps are doing that, that's something you need to be told. So all the privacy logs are coming out is basically saying that if your data is being collected, people who are given the data should know how you want to use it. They should also have the right to destroy the data you're storing. This is on a high level, the principles of privacy. Under that comes security, right? I mean, you know, you're collecting data, store it securely, etc., etc., all sub-categories, but this is on a high level what privacy is all about.
And why so much debate on different governments have a different stand? Europe has a different stand on privacy. US has a different stand on...
No, underlying, it's all evolved from GDPR.
What is GDPR?
I mean, this is the European Union version of privacy.
Do you know protection?
Global Data Protection Act.
Okay. So Europe decided among themselves that they'll follow GDPR?
Yeah. And enforce anyone who has to do business with Europe to follow the same as well.
Does India have any form of privacy laws right now?
PDP bill, which is now passed, is a variant of that.
What is that?
Basically, same thing, you know, just make sure consumers' data is protected, not misused.
And right now, fines are getting imposed, right, all over the world, like Europe.
Yeah, that's cybersecurity, that's what I mean. This market is actually driven by regulations, regulatory. And if you look at this space, the last 10 regulations that came is a headwind for marketing companies, Google, Facebook.
Yeah.
Their business is hampered by this. But cybersecurity market is booming because of these same regulations, which is a headwind for us. Tailwind for us.
And that's why we see the largest globally company in this space is Palo Alto Networks, right?
Yeah.
Which became from $20 billion to $100 billion.
Yeah.
Under Nikesh Arora.
Yeah. I know. I follow them closely.
What are the other companies that you look up to in this space?
Colossus is there. They have been there for quite some time. Colossus.
Okay.
But I mean, I look up to them because, you know, they are not like in the... So there are a lot of startups who came... You know, grew pretty big, then kind of like struggle because they are like in an aggressive growth path. Yeah. Colossus and a couple of other companies, they're not like growing like an aggressive fast, but they're very strong businesses. They're like profitability is there. Growth is there, obviously. Very strong in the sense, you know, just go down like a house of cards. Those businesses have very strong unit economics. I was actually in the Palo Alto Networks, met the CEO.
Nikesh?
No, in Colossus CEO. And they were telling me, and that business has been there for 25 plus years. They always look for the core unit economics of their business than anything else.
Thanks a lot, Raul. Really enjoyed doing this podcast. We talk about various things. We talk about dark web security. We talk about artificial intelligence. We talk about various scams that are going on in India globally, right? And what kind of talent is required to bring India on the forefront? What is your last piece of advice for professionals who want to build a career in cyber security, dark web security, right? You mentioned they have to get hands-on practical experience, but let's say, for next 10 years, what they have to do?
Yeah. See, if you ask me which is that area I wanted to spend my next 20 years, I would say cybersecurity.
Okay.
While it creates wealth for me and my family, my investors, my people, more than the wealth, it has the capability to protect lives of people. Like I said, tomorrow everything is going to be smart. smart fridge, we have smart fridge, smart bulbs. Our homes are sitting.
Watches have become
Everything is a computer, yeah. Right? And pacemakers. Today, you can actually remotely, destroy someone's pacemaker and kill that person. Technically. Now, our effort is not just protecting computers, but saving lives.
Yeah.
So I believe this space is going to have enormous potential in the future, now and in the future, because it's doing so much for the community.
Yeah.
And I believe when you make money while helping people, that's the best way to make money. So that's what I have huge respect for, not every other cybersecurity professional, but everyone who's supporting that ecosystem.
Got it. And you think that there's enough scope for beginners to learn the space in the next many years?
No, yeah, absolutely. As long as computers are going to be there, there's always going to be something.
And even if, let's say, tomorrow CloudSec, you get a good acquisition offer,
You
sell CloudSec, you're going to start another company in the same space?
Cybersecurity? I think we should only think about selling the company if you're not able to perform, right? As long as you're able to double our revenues every year, that's something.
Let's say Palo Alto Networks hypothetically come to you tomorrow with a $1 billion offer. What will you do?
Interesting. I mean, listen, I enjoy what I'm doing right now.
Yeah.
I don't think the question I always ask, what will I do with $1 billion?
Yeah.
But then if it adds value to my investors and my people who have supported me, then I will always have to consider that. But I would not say that will be my first interest. My first interest would be to build Palo Alto, then get acquired by Palo Alto.
And what is required for CloudSec to become Palo Alto?
See, I think doubling every year or more than doubling triple year in revenue is definitely something. The headwinds and is also going to help. And see, large good businesses will take time to build, and those, for the name of the company, it took them 13 years to do 10 million. And it took them another 5 years to do 800.
Who is that? Is Klaviyo or Atlassian or which one?
Let me get you the name. I'm bad with names. And I was just sharing this with the team last day. Yeah. It's called Procore. Procore. They are at 8 billion market cap today. It took them 13 years to reach 9.6 million revenue.
Okay.
8 years to reach 890 million.
Got it.
Procore is the company.
And it's in cybersecurity?
This is in technology, not cybersecurity. Cybersecurity is again, it's a space which is growing. I mean, like I said, every new regulation is actually a tailwind for us. So I would definitely put my next 10 years here.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you are what, 36 right now?
In
today, what your age?
I'm 35.
Okay.
Yeah.
You think you want to do it till you're 50?
Yeah. I mean, what else will I do?
Well, thanks a lot, Rahul.
Yeah.
Highly enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.